And welcome to the Glacially Musical Podcast. It is beer, metal, and swearing. Of course, I am Nick Cameron, your host of Glacially Musical, an aborted attempt at being serious, joined by my good friend, a man who's always bouncy. He's got pockets to keep things. He might even get a little punchy, and if he does, punch him in the balls. My good friend, Kangaroo Chakas. How we doing today, buddy?
Crikey, what an opening.
Actually, I have a coworker now that is from New Zealand.
Definitely so, not Australian.
No, but similar.
Do they have kangaroos in New Zealand? I don't know.
They have kangaroos in the Mighty Boosh, which is from England.
No idea what that is.
Oh, I feel bad for you. Anyway, thank you everyone for joining us for week two of the Mighty Slayer. Right now, as last week, if you did not carve Slayer into your forearm, you should be doing it now. Your left arm should be Slayer, where you can read it. Your right arm should be Slayer backwards, where you can read it in the bathroom mirror, unless, of course, you are evil and left-handed. Then flip it. Then flip the script. Anyway, here's how we do this. We have a greeting, a beer check, vinyl check, news check, shirt check. Did I miss anything? And then we roll to the meat of the episode, which this week, of course, is Slayer. Beer check for me. I think I did not do this one last week, and if I did, I apologize. And if I did, I will slam it down and get another one. This is the Irie IPA. It is a delicious 8.5% ABV. And I am just going to pour this into my Gateway Grizzlies pint glass.
Not that we're fans of doing accents, but I'm surprised you didn't say Irie.
I don't know how this word is pronounced.
Or is it Ire?
No, it's I think, I-R-I-E.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I think it's supposed to be Caribbean, so it's probably Ire.
It's Tight Head Brewing. It is a 8.5% double IPA. So
you have had a Tight Head brand beer recently. So
oh, it was this one. Then I've only ever had this one. Oh, balls.
No, I don't think so. I think that's a different one. I'm not sure. I have, for the seltzer check, I have Liquid Death. Murder Your Thirst. There it is. You don't have to lean that close to the microphone when you're doing that voice. Severed Lime.
When I do that voice, I do.
Severed Lime. Pop. Cheers.
Cheers, my friend. It is the greatest hour of the week. Unless we go long or short, then it's the greatest 48 minutes and 16 seconds of the week. I'm going to move on into my vinyl check. Of course, I am once again, like Arsenal has done, I'm doing the double. Arsenal is an English football team. Doing the double refers to winning the league and the FA Cup championship. First, we're going to start off with an abject classic. A record that lawyer wife literally thanked me for purchasing. And it was not for her, it was for myself. So if you want to take a quick guess as to what artist this might be.
Hall & Oates.
I will fight you.
Is it Billy Joel?
I will fight you. What's funny about that is Keefe sends me a text on Sunday, new Billy Joel song. And my response was just simply, no, thank you. He couldn't understand why I wasn't involved. Anywho, this is a man who has been around longer than Billy Joel, a man who hung out with Jim Morrison, a man who had way too much beer backstage. However, this is not a man. This is a band named after the man. In 3 weeks, it'll be this way for my kids. School's Out by Alice Cooper. It does have all the desk business, which I absolutely hate. I do not like it when they do things like that. I can't even figure out where the hell the stupid record is supposed to go, but it is in the Mylar, whatever. I got this one on, you know, every time we hear, you know, one of the songs off this record, and I go, oh yeah, I really need that one. Lawyer wife's response is the same and immediate. Nick, why don't we have that record? Which is the exact opposite of usually, Nick, why did you spend $30 on this piece of crap record? So, you know, I had that going for me. Now, You may judge me harshly on this next record. You may call me a purchaser, a supporter of crime on this next record. And you would be accurate. However, I'm only purchasing this counterfeit, unofficial version, bootleg, whatever term you would like to use to ease your particular brain. Because the man himself will not re-release it. This album is from, this is 1992's Danzig 3, How the Gods Kill. Yes, this is a, it is a gatefold. Nice gatefold, got the lyrics inside. You can tell it is a counterfeit because counterfeits are typically very, very shiny. They don't have the proper look to them.
It's unglossy. Were you holding that up correctly, the right orientation?
I don't know. Was that it?
That's not the right orientation. That should be, the Giger should be mouth up like facing you.
Okay. Well, here's how, so now it looks like Emerson, Lake & Palmer.
Yes.
And it is printed on 180 gram translucent red vinyl with the proper Deaf American label. I mean, they did it sounds decent. They did a really good job on it. You know, 1992 is not a good era for the vinyl record in America because most bands were recording digitally at this time. And digital records recorded digitally don't sound as good on vinyl as records on analog.
I believe, 93 is the official release year. I'm a little jealous of that. I'm going to be honest with you. A little jealous of that Danzig.
If I had known that, I would have bought you one.
No.
I got this for $28.99 at Planet Score Records, which I took you to. And I got the Alice Cooper record on Discogs for about $8. $8 or $9 and like $14.15 shipped. So, you know, pretty good haul for not a whole lot of money.
Nice work, sir. I love the Cooper. I forget what year it is where he disbands the Alice Cooper band and he just goes by Alice Cooper.
75, I believe.
Okay. And then, you know, he had the record with the desk. He had the record with the panties. He had the record with the dollars.
The desk was the panties.
Oh, is that it?
So you're like mixing two metaphors, which makes no sense at all.
The newer re-release of that album comes with like panties draped on top of it that come off or something.
The panties were the record sleeve.
Okay, they might be scratched and stuff.
Covers half the record anyway. I mean, the whole thing is stupid. Look, I love the idea of people wanting to get goofy with and creative with their packaging, but there's a limit. I mean, there's a limit.
Kiss was the bosses of that, but
they were not. They want you to think that.
Oh, all right. Well, maybe Pink Floyd, maybe the Beatles. Not sure. Kiss, I don't know. Kiss wants you to think they invented. I'm Gene Simmons, and I invented air and shoes.
Correct. I'm Gene Simmons. Kiss invented makeup on stage. I'm Gene Simmons. We created platform shoes. I'm Gene Simmons. We did everything first. You did everything second, but you did all of it at once first.
Very fair. Very fair. All right. It's time for my vinyl check. Let's move it along. I am checking a record I have not checked before, still cutting through the 2023 assortment of things. This was cool. I picked this up from Riding Easy Records, a very cool band, a very cool label if you like stoner rock, psychedelic rock, desert scene music, if you know what that is. This was bought as an addition to another. I was like, they're having a sale. I'm already getting this other thing. Let me get this thing. I think I checked the other thing already a while back. This is Mondo Drag, Through the Hourglass. Very cool 70s style album cover. I tried to
love that cover.
Tried to conceal this from the reveal behind me with the back cover, but the back cover also says Mondo Drag. So nothing I can do about that. Already in the Mylar, because again, I have stuff in the Mylar now. And on the nice black 180 gram with the very cool Mondo Drag on the front and the Riding Easy label on the back, if you could see it without the glare of the light behind me. This was $20 on a sale. Riding Easy frequently has sales, so if you sign up for their email list, they will send you discounts and stuff you can take advantage of.
Very cool. Before we get into the... I'm going to do my shirt check real quick. I am rocking my brand new Randy Rhoads t-shirt. I picked this up. It's also got a picture on the back, too. Similar picture on the front, and he has the polka dot on the back. He's got the Jackson, the white Jackson, the only one he ever really played. He did have a black one for a couple of weeks, literally, and unfortunately. I picked this up at a place called the Great American Shirt Shop on my trip to Rockford last weekend. Last weekend, one of my closest friends, one of my oldest friends. Oops, I don't want that. I want this. What did I do? Uh-oh. No, I did something.
I think it's your screen keeps changing, whatever you did, whatever you clicked to do. And it just cast a different light on your face. You're okay. Don't worry about it.
It moved me to the other side, and I'm set. Oh. So.
Oh no! I don't. Do you want that angle? That's a new angle. I don't think you want that.
Yeah. Whatever.
You were fine. If you move it back the way you had it, you look fine. If you want.
But right, I'm not looking straight on.
Yeah, but I'm now seeing the rest of the room, which I don't know if you. I mean, it looks fine, but like, I don't know if you want.
The restroom's fine. You can't see anything. I don't want seen.
All right.
So it's fine. I mean, you can see. Ted Lasso, Stanley Cup. You can see the flag a little bit better. You can see my jerseys. Anyway, in Rockford with one of my oldest friends, Jamie, I had to get my steps in on Saturday because my daily steps this year are now 5,800, and I go walking most days. And it's like, okay, so we were in the mall in the arcade. Well, let's walk the mall. And we came across a rock and roll shop. So I got to pick up this shirt. I got to pick up another shirt, which I will check later. And I also picked up for the first time on purpose, I purchased some guitar picks. I purchased a nice little package of Iron Maiden guitar picks, which will go on the Calyx like I did with the other ones. But this past weekend, Rockford was great. We went to a Chinese restaurant that we had gone to before in 2005. When we decided it was terrible and would never do it again, so we went back, and we had sushi on Saturday and nice steak dinner. We should have actually gotten the Roadhouse steak dinner rather than the local place because they did not rub their steak at all. But so I picked up this shirt, like I said, in Rockford. Nice shirt. I question the legality of said shirt. It may have been a complete bootleg store. I don't know.
I did like the photo of you in your seat at the hockey game in your hockey jersey, double fisting a Busch beer. It was like literally looks like Nick in his natural habitat.
It was Busch Light, which is what makes it funny. My wife kept saying, because she knows my friend Jamie, don't embarrass Jamie. Don't embarrass Jamie. And I looked at him like, what am I going to do? It's $2 Busch Light night. What am I going to do? Get drunk on Busch Light? She looks at me and she goes, yeah. You're going to get drunk on Busch Light. Thankfully, Jamie has known me longer than Lawyer Wife, and anything that I could do to it, anything that I would be able to do to embarrass her has already been done, and I still have not. So I'm much calmer now. But yes, we went to Rockford, Illinois, saw the Ice Hogs take on the Baby Blackhawks. I was cracking up the people around me because I did not care who won. I just wanted fights. So they're doing duh, duh, duh. Let's go Hogs, and I'm going da da da. Just have fun. I just hope they all had fun. You know, just have a good time. You know, play your best, and you know, give handshakes at the end of the game. They didn't line up for handshakes. I was kind of surprised. But
how unsportsmanlike! This is an unofficial hockey check. How are the Blues doing any better since the coaching change, or no?
Blues have been doing better since the coaching change. Yes, we had a 5-game win streak. We are presently on. Our bye week. So the Blues bye week came directly after the All-Star game, and they start playing again this Sunday against Buffalo. And actually Saturday. And this Saturday we are that is our date anniversary observed. It is not the actual date. Our actual first date was on Valentine's Day. However, as you may guess, getting a table anywhere on Valentine's Day is a little difficult. So we are having a super epic dateversary day, and it's going to start off with going to watch the Blues at 12 p.m., and it will not end until we say it's over.
Very good. Yeah, Valentine's Day, meh, not a big fan. Ranges are doing very well still, 31-16-3. And they are technically winning right now versus the Tampa Bay Lightning in a game I was watching a little of before we came on. My shirt check, just to move this puppy along, I am wearing my very fun Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem shirt. We did a whole episode on Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem album.
I was able to put it back. I didn't like looking that direction, and I look better.
You do look better, yeah.
So, news check. It is a great week if you love geriatric rock stars and brand new videos. Take that however you'd like, because it's true. Ace Frehley, formerly of Kiss, released the second single, I believe, of the album, of which he claims will make Gene and Paul look like imbeciles. The song that makes them look like imbeciles might be the third single. This week was Walking on the Moon, which is, oh my god, the video is Ace in front of a green screen in a space uniform, like NASA outfit, except with like udders, with two aliens playing guitar with him. And this is another song where he sings about how much he loves his girlfriend. And frankly, Ace's love songs are a little misogynistic. If you listen to the lyrics of What Every Girl Wants, basically he says, I will give you what every girl wants because you have no feelings of your own and desires of your own. Because I will give you what every girl wants. Okay, great, awesome. Moving on from there, Judas Priest released a single and a video called Crown of Horns. Frankly, could not finish this one. It's not bad. It's not bad. The lyrics are very stupid. I'm going to say it. It's very stupid. Judas Priest is now at the part of the stage of their career where they don't have anything to sing about anymore. They've already said it all. And at least he's not singing his stage raps, which does happen. Ozzy Osbourne's Let Me Hear Ya, I believe the name of the song was. And Kiss's Hell or Hallelujah. I mean, old rock stars singing their stage raps is a thing, and it should be stamped out and ridiculed. Let's see. We have one more new single from a geriatric rock star, somebody that might be germane to this week's episode of the podcast. Kerry King, formerly of Slayer, released his latest single, which I forget the name of the song. Idle Hands?
Idle Hands.
There we go. I couldn't remember if Idle Hands was the single or the album. Idle Hands, which I've always known and never forgot. I was testing everyone to see if they would believe that crap, which clearly everyone did. And it is probably the best single of the three. I really enjoyed it. It had that classic Slayer groove. It didn't have the nimbleosity, the surgical precision of Slayer tracks, because Jeff isn't there and Gary Holt's not there. Love Kerry King, but he, like Jimmy Page, like Ace Frehley, is a sloppy player. He's not that super precise. He's not Dave Mustaine. He's not James Hetfield. He's not Scott Ian. He's his own, like David S. Pumpkins, he's his own thing. But, he also dropped some interesting news. He has not spoken at all. Zero contact with Tom Araya since 2019. He has been in conversation with Gary Holt and Dave Lombardo. However,
incorrect.
Not Dave Lombardo, I'm sorry, Paul Bostaff. Paul Bostaff.
Paul is in his band.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And he made a conscious decision. He was going to put Gary in his band and then decided that Gary was too much of a part of Slayer at the end to be in Kerry's solo band. Fair enough.
Well, and I mean, you know, Gary has a job.
He has a very important job.
Yeah, he's still in Exodus. Exodus never stopped. Every time I saw Exodus, that's not true. Some of the times I saw Exodus were opening for Slayer. So Exodus would play the first set, then somebody else would come out, and then Slayer would come out. You know, which is, you know, really, if you think about it, Gary Holt got paid twice. Good for him. You know, game in the system. And Dave Lombardo, however, I apologize for mixing up the names. I think I said Dave Lombardo because I was saying favorite, thinking to my brain, favorite drummer, because Paul Bostaff is my favorite Slayer drummer. Come fight me, everyone. I'm living with it. I am living this truth. should have waited till we got to the episode that he was in before I dropped that. But Kerry King has also said that Dave Lombardo is dead to him, and talked about how Dave Lombardo dropped his anger when Slayer was on a 14-hour plane ride to Australia. So fuck that guy. He is dead to me.
Yeah, really. I think the revelations about the end of Slayer, this is Kerry's first extensive interview where he really drops the trowel on the whole band. I think that stuff is more interesting than the song. I love the song. A lot of people hate the song and think the song sucks, which kind of confuses me.
How Again, could I think you a hate lot of people. If you like Kerry King or Slayer, you'll like the song.
Apparently, a lot of people don't like Kerry King and don't understand Slayer or Kerry King's importance to Slayer at all. Like, okay, yeah, he maybe Jeff wrote the better music, but you know, Kerry is important. He really is important to the band.
You know, last week I joked about how, you know, Jeff Hanneman wrote all your favorite Slayer songs and Kerry King did too. But without Kerry King, it's not Slayer. You know, I was not trying to diminish, you know, Kerry King. Kerry King is he's like the Gene Simmons to Paul Stanley. You need them both. Without both of them, it doesn't work. This sounds like he is trying, the guitar work on the new track sounded like he was trying to bridge the gap between his playing and Jeff's playing, trying to play on the third rail, as it were, between the two. And the singer from Death Angel, I will say it, I felt like he was doing his best Tom Araya impression. And Kerry King himself has stated, I'm doing my own thing. I don't see a Slayer reunion coming. However, I am making Slayer's type music because that's what I like.
That's what he likes. That's what he does. That's what it says on the tin. To throw that cliche out again for my British friends, I will just say as a little bit of a spoiler, I am trying to get Slayer book author and Slayer podcast host DX Ferris on the pod here with us during the Slayer series to talk about Slayer. And he just dropped a podcast that is, you know, most of his podcast is sort of a retelling of his book with a few more anecdotes. And he dropped an anecdote that is not in his book before Kerry gave this interview. Maybe he had some warning, I don't know. But he talked all about this, exactly what led to Dave being out of Slayer. So when you're done listening to this podcast, you should go listen to DX Ferris's The Slayer Podcast. Perhaps we'll get him on. I don't know. He's very busy writing another book right now. If you have no further news, I will give my news check.
Yes, please.
It's time for the weekly Glacially Musical Metallica check-in. And you know what was last weekend?
Metallica!
You know, of course, we're not really talking about the Taylor Bowl this weekend, the NFL sponsored Taylor Swift publicity event that also features a football game.
I'm only watching Superb Owl Sunday this year just for Taylor Swift.
I saw your tweet.
I've already created a menu. We are having pretzel dogs. We are having wings. We are having rye dip. We are having beer dip. We are having Ruffles and pub cheese. I'm sorry, not Ruffles. I'm trying to take down the man this year. We're going to have Utz.
Utz is my favorite chip because they are the official
chip. Utz is awesome.
They're from New York, and they are the official chip of the New York Yankees. So I love Utz.
I'm throwing it away.
Well, you should get the sour cream and cheddar. Those are the best flavors. Combined, sour cream and cheddar Utz. Anyway.
When you were here, did I get you pork steak flavored chips?
We did have the local chips because
Chicago.
Yeah, we
had the Red Hot Riplets, but there is also the barbecue pork steak flavored potato chips.
I ate the whole bag and I think you were mad. But I don't know. You were like, how'd you eat that whole bag? I was like, look at me.
Red Hot Riplets are delicious, period.
Yeah, they were good. I like to sample the local thing wherever I am at. No more chips for a long time for me, though. So, Metallica, Metallica, Metallica. The Grammys were last weekend. We like to call them the Shammies. You know, we don't love award shows, but we can't stop talking about them, or I can't. We are down to
one. We watched at home.
We are down. Well, if you watched at home, you didn't see any categories meaningful to this show on the air. They were on YouTube all day long, and then at night the actual broadcast happens that doesn't honor rock music in any way.
Yeah, I know. They can eat their own butt. I'm going to point out the kid wanted to watch it this week.
Yeah, yeah.
The kid whom I have to mention, she begged me 8 times, Dad, will you... Dad, oh my God, Dad, will you mention me? Tell him how great and awesome my music is.
She does not talk like that.
But do not mention what songs I listen to, Dad. She was rooting for Lana Del Rey this year.
Apparently, the hashtag Justice for Lana was all over social media, and I was confused as to why. I think her fan base was already in a whirl, if you will, a mood, because early there were songwriting awards given out in the pre-show, not the regular telecast, where Lana was expected to sweep, and she won none of them. So that hashtag was already going, and then I think on the award show itself, she didn't win much or anything. Leading to a conspiracy theory, maybe.
To quote Jason Lee as the lead singer of Stillwater, everybody says they don't want to be popular. They just want to write music that they love. But by and large, the popular music is the best music.
That is the buzz. You saying you like Fever Dog. That's the buzz.
To pull it forward a bit more, the most popular music always wins. I love 72 Seasons. We have gushed about 72 Seasons.
Nick helping me with my segue. I appreciate it. Thank you. Continue.
We did a specific long form recording or review of 72 Seasons. However, if you ask me, is that the best metal record this year? I would say no. I would actually put friend of the show Gravehuffer, their new album, ahead of it, because their new album was something new for them and special, whereas 72 Seasons is just a continuation of the Robert Trujillo Metallica trilogy.
So the Grammys are never going to have underground metal. The Grammys are not an underground anything. There are underground hip-hop, there are underground rappers we never hear about that are probably...
Especially since Macklemore said on stage, we did this without a label.
Right. There's,
so he
there's,
ruined it for everybody.
There's many people out there who are not going to get recognized because NARIS, the company that runs the Grammys and the voting, is about a popularity contest. It is not awarding merit of artistry. They think they are. They're not. So I will try to speed this up a little. I want to run through some of these nominees and winners. The only metal category was open, and Metallica won, beating out Disturbed, Ghost for an Iron Maiden cover, Spirit Box, who a lot of people feel like were robbed, Slipknot for kind of a throwaway standalone single because they got gypped the year before. I don't think, Disturbed song's kind of a nothing burger. Album's popular. They're huge now because of that one cover, Sound of Silence. I highly suggest you go online and look up Miles Kennedy and David Draymond sing Sound of Silence. You will cry. Ghost, Phantom of the Opera, faithful, decent cover. Would have been cool to get Iron Maiden's name out there, but they didn't win. Again, Slipknot, second biggest band in the whole world beside Metallica in terms of metal. Just passed over. Spirit Box, probably more deserving. I am the only, maybe marginally well-known reviewer that had Metallica at all near the top 10. I had them as my eighth best record. That's just me. Baroness was my number one for 2023. Continuing, best rock album. Foo Fighters, But Here We Are. Greta Van Fleet, Starcatcher. Metallica, 72 Seasons. Arguably rock, not really. Queens of the Stone Age, which was very well acclaimed, and Paramore, This Is Why, which won Best Rock Album. I have been on record as saying the Paramore album is not even good for Paramore, let alone a good album, but they won. And then again, Best Rock Performance, I'm not going to explain what these things mean because they're arbitrary, Arctic Monkeys, Black Pumas, Foo Fighters, Metallica for Lux. These are for songs. Best Rock Performance is a song category. So Arctic Monkeys, Sculptures of Anything Goes, haven't heard it, don't know it. Black Pumas, More Than a Love Song, think I heard it once, don't care. Foo Fighters, Rescued, great song, You Will Cry, it's about his mom. Metallica, Lux Eterna, great song. But Boy Genius won. Boy Genius is the supergroup from Lucy Dacus, Julianne Baker, and Phoebe Bridgers. Phoebe Bridgers actually won the most Grammys combined on the whole awards, and nobody acknowledged that. Because she won 3 songwriting Grammys and producing Grammys off-air, and then 2 or 3 on-air. Best Rock Song. I don't know why that's different than Rock Performance, but Best Rock Song. Boy Genius wins again for the same song. I don't understand
winning. Because performance can actually be like you being on Saturday Night Live.
I guess. Winning again, Boy Genius Supergroup again beat out Foo Fighters for Rescued. Olivia Rodrigo, the pop star who did a rock album similar to Demi Lovato. Queens of the Stone Age, Emotion Sickness, and the Rolling Stones nominated but lost for the song Angry. And then the final rock category or rock-related music category, all of these were off-air and just kind of announced off-air. Best Alternative Music Performance. So this is a single song. The group Always, Belinda Says, never heard of them, don't know it. Arctic Monkeys, Body Paint, don't care. Boy Genius, Cool About It, another single they had. Lana Del Rey, Alternative Music. A&W, I think it's a root beer, not sure. And Paramore, again, for This Is Why, the song. Don't understand, again, this album sucks. Don't understand the love for it. But okay, I'm not a I am a Paramore fan. Don't understand the love for it. I will also say Olivia Rodrigo performed, and people were calling her performance satanic. She has a song, Vampire, about ex-boyfriends, similar to some Taylor Swift energy. And she burst blood on her dress during the performance. Like, exploded blood all over herself, and people were calling this satanic, and I'm praying for her soul. People, it's performance, it's music,
people
it's art.
People said the same thing about Gene Simmons vomiting blood. Oh, it's satanic. I'm sorry, I don't know any satanic ritual where you impale your internal organs and spit up blood. People, if you're going to say something is satanic and the word Satan is not involved, shut up. Merciful Fate is satanic.
Yeah, similar, I forget what award show was last fall where you had Sam Smith and Kim Petras do their song together, and it was like an attempted satanic ritual with demon dancers and fire and blood and red everything, and people were like, I love Satan, and this has nothing to do with Satan. So anyway, the Grammys, Rob Trujillo accepted on behalf of the whole band who were with their families because the band is on a high, you know, on a break until their first show in about 10 weeks. Their first show of 2024. Rob showed up and was like, I want to see, you know, guitars and basses and drums in the hands of children. That's the reason we still do what we do. I thought that was really swell of him. But the Grammys, aka the Shammies, who cares? You know, that was
one thing I will say. The best moment of the Grammys that I saw was Tracy Chapman coming out to sing her song.
100% did not care about that cover whatsoever. I feel like it's come up before on this podcast or somewhere else. Somebody asked me about it, and I was like, eh, I didn't think it was a very good cover. I don't care for white cis men covering the music of, you know, important underground working class hero type music. But it was wonderful to see them perform together. This needs to be a single. I would buy it on vinyl. Let's effing go.
I would like to see them do a record together. I would buy that.
I don't want to see a whole record. I don't care enough about Luke Combs for a whole record.
I like collaboration records, David.
Was he on the Dolly album? He might have been, right? Or is that Zach Bryan?
We did that like 3 weeks ago. I don't know.
Yeah. Toby Keith is dead. Yeah. Burn in hell. Right.
He's just ripping off Dio.
Yeah, I just it was been done better by others. There was a great the Hard Times was like, this is like our personal 9/11. You know, Toby Keith's family says this is like our personal 9/11, except there's no way for us to make a profit off of it. Oh,
ooh, ow!
I don't ever pick on the dead, but this dude was garbage.
I'll pick on the right people.
He was the same person who was like, I always support the cops during Breonna Taylor and George Floyd. So, you know, not a fan of a guy who shares a name partially with me. I will also say another
I will say this. Only a Sith deals in absolutes.
There it is. Let me finish my final news piece and we can move on to the meat of the episode. Just one other bit of Metallica news. I highly encourage Saint Anger lovers and haters to listen to the and Black Album lovers and haters to listen to the Metallica Report podcast this week with their guest Bob Rock, who explains the Saint Anger snare drum song, the choice that he made to pick that snare sound with Lars, why it was chosen, and some other nuggets of wisdom about his career as the producer of Metallica, among other things, and crew. So I think it's actually worth a good listen. I actually did a little news story on it. I thought it was so newsworthy. And that is my news.
Alrighty, I will now pick up where we left off. Slayer is touring Slayer is playing other songs in the set because, as every young band who had been around for a couple of years playing original music in the clubs, they'd had more than a single album's worth of music. As you may recall, they did Aggressive Perfector. Aggressive Perfector, is that the right? Nailed it. That is a terrible title, which makes no sense. They were playing Captor of Sin. They were playing Aggressive Perfector on tour. And they weren't ready to go back into the studio yet because they had to gel a bit more, write a bit more. However, our good friend Brian Slagle, friend of the show, decided they needed to make an EP. And in the 80s, the extended play was still very much a thing. It's not like it is now. When a band releases an EP, I'm actually pissed off because I have to pay the exact same amount of money to you to buy a full record, because that's how much, you know, it costs the same to press 20 minutes worth of music as it does to press 45 minutes worth of music. So it bugs me. I mean, finish your record. But back in the day, back in the 80s and even into the 90s, an EP was a third to half the cost of a full album. So he wants an EP. He wants something. So they record three tracks before they go back out on tour. I guess we can just go straight into the track by track on this. I mean, there's not a whole lot. It's touring. Oh, there's a little bit. This is where Gene Hoglan is brought into the thrash metal world. He is drum teching for Dave Lombardo on this while they're recording this. This album is recorded, and it's mentioned 1,000 times all over the place. This EP is recorded in a studio with concrete floors. I don't know what fart tool set up a recording studio with concrete floors, but that person can rot in hell because they're a dumbass. Concrete floors are very reflective, sound reflective. So, idiot, and this EP, if you'll excuse the pun, the sound of the EP is reflected in the concrete floors, and you can hear it quite a bit. This is also where Dave Lombardo puts his first double bass drum together. So now he has full-on double bass beats. However, as it was a concrete floor, there was problems with hit the bass drum not like sliding away from him. So Gene Hoglan had to hold the drums together while Dave is performing these songs to be recorded. I do not envy that man for that position. And this is how Gene Hoglan ends up in Death Angel. They go on tour and
Dark Angel,
excuse me.
Separate bands.
Is that because they're spelled and pronounced differently, like Homer Simpson and Homer Nixon?
Totally different bands.
Okay, fair enough. I apologize. I'm going by memory. And this is how he ends up in Dark Angel, because he tells their guitar player, "I'm way better than your drummer. You should hire me." And apparently that worked. So drunken high is one way to go through life, apparently. And that's really about all the background on this.
I mean, Gene is, to this day, arguably alongside Lombardo, the greatest drummer in the world. So no one would argue, and we've talked about Gene Hoglan on the past, because Lars ripped off a whole drum pattern from an entire song, one of the most popular songs by Dark Angel, for the breakdown riff. The ending riff of One is stolen from Gene. We've discussed this.
Yeah, no shade. I'm not saying he didn't deserve it. I'm just saying I'm shocked it worked. But if you've got nothing else, let's just bust into these tracks, and then we will get into the live EP, if you're good.
I am good, man.
Alrighty, it starts off with, this is a three-track EP in subsequent pressings. Aggressive Perfector is added on to the end, which was on Metal Massacre 3, as we discussed last week. And if you do recall last week, please, please take notes, because there will be a quiz later. So we start off with the longest song, one of the Slayer's longest song to date at this point, the 6-minute behemoth of a progressive thrash metal song, which is, of course, Chemical Warfare. Around this time, it cannot be understated that the United States is going on tirades about chemical warfare, and the entire world, the Geneva Convention, The Hague, everything. Chemical warfare is a huge thing, and it's come back in the world because Ronald Reagan and Donald Rumsfeld sold anthrax to Saddam Hussein.
Nigrodamus, how does George W. Bush know Iraq has weapons of mass destruction? Because he has the receipts.
Actually, I would say he has the proof of delivery. He has the signed invoice. He has the signed bills of lading that Saddam took them. But Chemical Warfare is an amazing song. It might be a little overlong. I will say that. However, you want to talk about some amazing lyrics. They are now crafting some amazingly dark lyrics. It's painful. You know, demons not ready to die, chemical warfare. Boom. Abject, perfect, classic. And not only that, but this is the first track where we get the classic Slayer groove. And I think that's something that's really underrated with Slayer because most people think of Slayer as, you know what, they're just chugging on that open E string in different patterns like Metallica did up to a certain point. But when Slayer did it, they did it with some class and some style. And that class and style is not reflected in the tablature, but it's reflected in the music. And here we have it.
Well done, sir. Well done. Always great at the setup. Let's be real. This EP comes out 6 months after Show No Mercy, and it's already a light years ahead of Show No Mercy in terms of songwriting. Obviously, the recording is not there yet, but that'll come. But Chemical Warfare, like we said, the building blocks, the foundation, the mortar is there on Show No Mercy, but this is leveled up significantly. When
Light
it
years.
comes to light years, significantly better than any song on Show No Mercy. Chemical Warfare is never, almost never out of the set the entire rest of Slayer's career. And I agree, it was like tiresome to hear something like similar to the Enter Sandman. I'm all set. I don't need to ever hear it again. I used to feel the way that way about this, but I didn't know Slayer was going away. Now I miss the song, and when I hear it, I like it. And yeah, it's such a breath. It's different sounding than anything in 1984. Fight Fire with Fire doesn't sound like this. You know what I'm saying? Like Overkill's first records don't sound like this in
Fight
terms of their
Fire with
peers.
Fire wants to sound like this.
What wishes it sounded like this, and not just the drums, everything. And I love Fight Fire with Fire, and it was great to hear it. We got to hear it live. It was a miracle. It was
Hell yeah,
magical.
bitches. For the record, you did not shirt check, so drop it real quick.
I did. I said my Dr. Teeth in the Electric Mayhem. I
I
pulled the
don't think
shirt
you said
open.
it.
I
All right,
definitely
cool.
did.
Moving on into the next track, if you don't
Thank you.
mind.
Thank you for your concern about my shirt check. I appreciate you.
Well, I mean, you have taken me to task on air, so.
Taking myself to task. I'm usually the reason it gets forgotten. I'm a dumbass. I'm a dense. I'm a dumbass.
Fair enough, dumbass.
Now I have meds-induced brain fog, so that's a new
Ooh.
thing. It's
All right.
great.
Well, I mean, if you have an excuse, that's all that matters. Moving forward, we are going to now talk about an amazing song, which gets a little problematic as you get a little older. Captor of Sin. There are some amazing solos, some amazing vocal performances. And what is great about this is he easily could have gone into that attempted Rob Halford scream. He does not. Of course, the subject matter is delightful and horribly horrific. It is about, I don't like saying those words because
It's
it
a
cuts.
little sketchy. We can just say it's sketchy and leave it at that, right? We don't have to say
Fair enough.
the actual word. It is a great song, like musically. It's a great. They
Yeah.
are really trying, just in these two songs alone, they are really trying to move away from the priest and maiden worship.
And they have successfully done so. Oh,
Awesome.
sorry.
No,
We're
that
both
was it.
trying. We're both trying to talk and then both trying to not talk at the same time.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. They have walked it back. And if you think about Metallica in Metallica's early days, yeah, James Hetfield did the exact same thing. Except it was way worse when he did it than when Tom Araya did it. Way worse. If you listen to Garage Days, not Garage Days, No Life to Leather or No Life to Leather 2, those recordings of those songs are painful to listen to.
Random question for you. Which has worse lyrics, Captor of Sin or the original Mechanics?
You know what? I gotta go the original Mechanics because at least Captor of Sin was trying to scare me. Whereas the original Mechanics is the worst sexual innuendo. I mean, that is the kind of sexual innuendo I would have come up with in junior high.
As you did make Dave.
You make my pistons bulge and you make my ball bearings melt from the heat. That's kind of like Katy Perry's California Girl song. We'll melt your popsicle. I don't know if any of these things are a good thing, but when I think about my genitalia in melting, I shy away.
Katy Perry is awesome. Her early lyrics are not.
I saw her in concert on the Eyeball Tour. I don't know what the name of it was. Moving on into the...
Since it is the Taylor Bowl this weekend, let's just give a shout out to Left Shark.
Left Shark, let's do this. And for us, it is the Superb Owl Sunday because it is illegal to say Super Bowl in any capacity if you don't pay them. So it's Superb Owl Sunday. Let us move on to the last track of the record, which is completely forgettable, and I have forgotten it already. Haunting the Chapel.
I mean,
it's a song it's a song that's there.
It's obligatorily satanic. You know, they
I do. This is the one, the Satan's cross, blah blah blah. Christian people, lies, lies, lies. Yeah,
rinse and repeat for 40 more years in their career, right?
They rewrote this song at least 13 or 14 more times.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean,
I keep the Bible in a pool of blood, so none of his lies can affect me.
And literally, you know,
I got written up at work because of that. When I worked at a record store, I actually played that after I played a promo CD of it that we were sent, and several people at the complained to my boss.
Here's a fun fact: we're not going to get to this record, but in the time after "God Hates Us All" was released, my email signature in the years to follow 9/11 was just no attribution. I know why your prayers will never be answered. ... because I like those. And I can't tell you how many people were like, what is that signature? What is wrong with you? I'm like, you don't know Slayer's classic released on 9/11, God Hates Us All? It's like, no, that's awful. Why would you have that in your email?
Repentless was also released on 9/11.
Was also released on 9/11. Also released on 9/11 was the album Uncivilization by Biohazard, which also featured a bunch of songs about the undoing of mankind and humanity's descent into anarchy. And unfortunately for them, 2 weeks before 9/11, Machine Head released a video for their song Crashing Around You, in which the two towers burned to the ground.
All right. Shout out to friend of the show, The Coup, legendary underground hip-hop group. Boots Riley retweeted me a couple of times, so that qualifies. Friend of the show.
Fair enough. He's great.
Released the album Party Music in the summer of 2011, which featured Boots and Pam the Funkstress blowing up the World Trade Center.
Again, 2011 or 2001?
I'm sorry, 2001.
Oh, yeah, so it's right before it happened. All right, fair enough.
Yeah. They ended up changing it to a martini Molotov cocktail, which was a better cover. Okay, moving on to the perhaps live album, perhaps not live album, Live Undead. Starts off with Black Magic, and anybody who hates Black Magic hates Slayer, period.
Before we do the tracks really quick, I just want to say, yes, it's been debated as to whether it was actually produced in the studio or not. They were on tour a lot. If I get to talk to Brian Slagle once again someday, I'll ask him. Maybe we can get Brian on the podcast also. Don't know. The Metal Blade Museum is now a daily thing in Las Vegas, so I would really like to go next time I go to Vegas. They did bring in, weirdly enough, for this album, an actual outside producer for the first time ever, who ends up working with them quite a bit, Bill Metoyer. But now we can go to the tracks. And yes, you know, you're definitely getting basically the first record live. More or less the whole record.
Yeah, ish. Next track up is Keefe's favorite with his favorite intro, Die by the Sword.
Die by the Sword!
What I loved about this was we did not have the Kerry King bullfighting pins in the testicles. So it's a much better version than
Tom Araya.
I said Kerry King, didn't I? Yes, Tom Araya. Tom Araya actually sings this in his own register. Hopefully, on the next record, he won't be singing so high. Foreshadowing.
Camp, yeah, no notes. Die by the Sword is great. It's a fun track. It's one of the best early Hanneman songs.
Moving on into Captor of Sin again. You know, it's a great song. It's decent enough version.
It's the music is great for 84. I don't know if it's a great song. And, you know, we have a new song. Let's play it live, right? Let's put it on the live album. Let's play it live.
Obviously.
We've been playing that first record for like two straight years. We need something new to play.
They had been playing Captor of Sin on the last tour, though. That was on the tour. That's part of the genesis of Haunting the Chapel. Then they move on into The Antichrist, which, fun song, much better rendition than the studio version. Tom is singing. He's not singing, I am the Antichrist. He's, I am the Antichrist. It's deeper. It's more evil. It's guttural. It works better. Still, this is 12-year-olds writing about Damien from The Omen. So yeah, it's not terribly necessary.
I like that, Tom, what you hear on Live Undead is you're starting to hear Tom's shouty voice really develop here. You know, like, I mean, you know, it's unfair to Tom. Tom is often regarded as the least talented member of Slayer. It's unfair to him. Because I think it takes an enormous amount of talent to just play bass and keep up with these other two guys who are playing it in human speeds and still scream on key-ish. And he really is developing, like, these early formative years, he's really developing what becomes his signature style. So I just want to give, I give Tom a lot of grief. I want to give Tom some flowers for these early tracks.
It's a lot like David Vincent of Morbid Angel. You know, playing bass at that speed and being able to stay on time at that speed while singing. And I don't know if you've noticed, but there aren't a whole lot of vocalists that play bass. There is a reason for that. It's kind of like James Hetfield, Dave Mustaine, oft mentioned of those two gentlemen. They riff really well while singing, which is very difficult. I'm now going to stop, you know, pontificating on that because we've all heard it.
I was going to say, do you know someone who also was a vocalist that played bass?
Lemmy. Kip Winger.
Me.
Oh. Roger Waters?
Couldn't resist, could you?
Nope, could not.
Geddy Lee?
Geddy Lee.
Just so Roger is not the last named name.
You brought that one on yourself.
Yes, I did.
Speaking of which, apparently he's in the studio, so we'll see if anything actually comes of it that's not him pissing on Dark Side of the Moon. I never did buy that, by the way. I never did buy that. I had actually come to a price point when Amazon hits 25. I decided, no, it's got to be 15 now because I heard another song. Moving on to side two, Evil Has No Boundaries. You know what? This song is cheesy as fuck. But you know what? They play it with such conviction, so kudos.
It's also short. It's under 3 minutes. Can't be mad at it.
I'm not mad at it, but I'm not going to praise it either. Next, we get to Show No Mercy, which they have really cut down the length of Show No Mercy. It was about 7 or 8 minutes on the album and completely forgettable. And even when they cut it down to 3 minutes and play it punchier and harder, man, it's still forgettable. I don't know this song at all.
This is the first track that you have twice said was forgettable, and it is solely written by Kerry King.
Okay, I'm not trying to, like, you know, pee on Kerry
King. No, but I mean, I'm pointing out the fact that you unintentionally have now peed on him twice. And, you know, it's warranted, let's be honest.
And then Aggressive Perfector rounds out the record. Frankly, I don't need this one either. I mean, it's rare that a band drops a record onto a compilation album that becomes a classic. It's just, I can't think of that ever really happening. And I think most Metallica fans would also agree that Hit the Lights is not a classic outside of our little bubble, and barely inside our little bubble.
Yeah, that's not unfair. Do we want to quickly discuss the reissue, which included Haunting the Chapel? Because let's face it, Live Undead is 23 minutes and 16 seconds, according to this entry.
But Haunting the Chapel is only 13 minutes until you throw Aggressive Perfector on there. Right. So, you know, if you put both of them, you can fits onto one record. It's 40 minutes. If I see this cut version of it on vinyl, maybe I'll buy it. I've come across Live Undead. I've come across Haunting the Chapel. And I'm like, I'm not spending $40 on that. You come on, give me something here.
I feel like I've seen it in the wild and passed on getting it.
I have seen it. We saw it at Vintage Vinyl. It was there. It was at Vintage Vinyl. It's been at Vintage Vinyl for like 6 months because people go, $40 for 23 minutes? I mean, come on. You got to at least – look, if I spend $40, I need 40 minutes. I mean, come on. That's why I told him it costs $50. And, yeah, so – I'm gonna wrap up my side of all this business. You know, we have got a band that is quickly heading on into legend, and this is when, you know, I made the joke about my wife talked about today. Lawyer wife was talking about how, oh God, somebody, oh Stevie Nicks, because Stevie Nicks tickets go on sale tomorrow. She's coming to St. Louis again, so we're gonna go. Lawyer wife's big fan. Never seen her, so we gotta go. And she's like, oh, she did a song with Beyonce. Well, not with Beyonce, but Destiny's Child. And I'm like, oh, when they were in the minor leagues, when she was in the minor leagues still. Because, I mean, Destiny's Child, nothing like what Beyonce became, you know, much. And that's kind of what this is. But Slayer was lucky enough to do it, get to the majors together.
I am going to be a hater and say Beyonce wasn't even the second best singer in Destiny's Child, let alone the first.
I have no idea. I don't know, and I don't care. I'm just talking about popularity. Just popularity, you know. Kerry Toporowski had his best penalty minute record in juniors, not in the pros. So he had 555 minutes in juniors, which in that league did not include major penalties in their PIMs. So if you had actually included the 10-minute majors and the game misconducts he acquired in that season, he would have had 850. But they didn't want the league to look that crazy, even though that league was that crazy. So anyway, where was I? Interrupting cow. Moo. So we are seeing a band that is in AAA. They are. And when the general manager comes down to watch them play, they walk up to the plate and they hit 4 home runs that day. And if you take the 3 songs off of Haunting the Chapel, you have 2 certified dingers. Then you look at The Antichrist, The Revamp of Black Magic, Die by the Sword. And you have they're just absolutely crushing it. They have gone from a band, and I don't know if we mentioned this last week, but Show No Mercy at that point in time was Metal Blade's highest selling debut record. It sold 40,000 copies at the time. So, and we went back to that, their batting average was like 3 for 10, which 300, 3 classic songs on one record, great work. Then they come back with, they go 2 for 3. They release 2, they write 2 classic songs out of 3. Then they do this live album where they jazz up baseball and make it Blurn's Ball, like in Futurama. So then they take their songs, which were a little middling. I don't think Black Magic made it into abject classic status on Show No Mercy. But the new version, the new release, the new presentation takes it into classic mode. Show No Mercy is still completely forgettable, however. But we have seen this band go from a nothing burger, and they are, you now cannot ignore. Not nothing burger. My God, that was rude, Nick. Nick, you are rude. They went from a Midland band scratching the surface into completely going straight Kool-Aid Man through the brick wall, saying, if you like metal, you can't ignore us.
They became a band similar to what William Miller wrote about. I'm back on Almost Famous somehow. It's a think piece about a middling band struggling to come to terms with their own success. By the way, Haunting the Chapel album cover still kind of a very basic nothing burger with the fire logo that no one cares for. But Live Undead has a decent cover, still kind of corny, but decent.
And kind of corny. By kind of corny, he means Wow, this is cornier than the black and white Night of the Living Dead. Although it was a great flick.
But it has... But Live Undead has what on the cover? The classic appearance of the first real classic Slayer angular logo. So I'm a big fan. You're muted.
It's on Haunting the Chapel as well. It's in the pentagram.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
Oh, yeah, it is there. Okay, fine. Oh, Haunting the Chapel's in blood and not fire. And yeah, okay. So it is in there. But I don't know. I feel like it's somehow more prominent in the top corner. My eye goes to the top there instead of the center, but you're not wrong. No, all right.
You know what? I will say the fact that they took the simplified version of it, cleaned it. It's cleaner. It pops more because it's Slayer on. It's that angular logo, as you pointed out, directly on the black, and
a little white highlight in the inner glow on the white, yeah, which on the black and the color looks cool.
I now yield my time to you, sir.
All right. Well, you know what that means. It's time to take us home. You have been listening to the Glacially Musical Podcast. You know our host, Nick Cameron, is everywhere on social media. Nick_no_C or @glacially_musical in most places. I am Ghost Cult Keefe @GhostCultKeefe of Ghost Cult Mag and GhostCultMag.com on all the things. Thanks so much for being here. If you made it this far, we really appreciate you. Please like and subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. It does help. We do read all the comments, however hurtful they may be. I really appreciate everybody that listened to the first Slayer episode. It actually was a nice uptick from our previous series, and hopefully that's the direction we're going in. As we say every week in the show, it's
try the ribs.
Try the ribs. Try to get your steak with a rub on it if possible. Don't fuck up a steak if you can help it. But this is the Glacially Musical Podcast. It doesn't play in Peoria, but surely Slayer did.
I've never had a good steak in Peoria, or any steak.
Apparently.